Hey, everybody. I usually do these monologues. Well, that's what Jeff calls them, monologues. I usually write them out. But today I'm just sitting here, Zeus the Wonder Dog at my side, thinking about a song. An old rock song from Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin. And the voice of Robert Plant singing "When the Levee Breaks." When the levee breaks, if it keeps on raining, the levee's gonna break. You know the song. And there's a line in it, a reference to Chicago. And another line saying, "Crying won't help you, praying won't do you no good." Well, I don't really believe that. I believe prayer does good, but I understand the sentiment. That's where we are. The levee's breaking. I think of Boss Madigan and the indictment of his former chief of staff, Tim Mapes, who was extremely close to Madigan for many, many years and is now facing, he's been indicted for obstruction of justice in that big federal investigation. And you know what, Tim? The feds are in the belly of the beast right now, aren't they? In the belly. And they're climbing up and down. And you're in the middle of it. So for you, Tim, the federal bus comes up and you've got a choice. When it stops in front of your house, you've got a choice. Are you going to sing and take a seat? Or are you not going to sing and get off? And another vehicle will come and take you away. You got to make that choice, man. When the levee breaks, Boss Madigan. It's not just Boss Madigan, though. I mean, we point at the man, but it's not him. It's the culture. The culture of Illinois politics, the culture of Chicago politics that makes it, that allows for people like Boss Madigan to thrive. And so all of us, everybody in Illinois, is somewhat responsible. Oh, you could say, I never voted for him, but maybe you voted for somebody who voted for him. Maybe you voted for somebody who supported him as speaker. You got to reckon, because the levee is going to break. Now, you know what? I don't want to talk about Memorial Day and whether they could make Saving Private Ryan again, because they couldn't. You'd have to get rid of the whole cast, and you'd have to have a different kind of cast. Check the identity politics boxes for the platoon that went out after looking for Private Ryan. And I don't want to talk about the poem by Colonel John McCrae in Flanders Fields. If you've ever heard it or read it, you know what I'm talking about. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow upon the crosses row by row. If you don't know what that is, well then, you're a victim of culture that erases things like that, important things like that. And I can't help you. Only you can help yourself. We're going to talk to Ray Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, about what's going on in the city council. Lori Lightfoot can't stand him. I kind of like him. And we'll see what he has to say about DuSable Drive and all the other nonsense. Virtue signaling while children are being gunned down in the city's gang wars, and City Hall doesn't have any ideas on how to stop it. I don't want to talk about the buyouts at the Tribune, the buyouts being offered. You've got your own problems. You don't want to deal with my problems, and I'm not going to go around begging anyone. It is what it is. But you know what I would like to talk about? We all need a break. And we could take a break with chicken. on this Memorial Day weekend and maybe later in the summer. And it doesn't involve a beer can up a chicken's butt. I'm way beyond that now. I've graduated from beer can chicken. Beer can chicken was the old me. The new me, in chicken terms, is Italian chicken under the bricks. Take two bricks, wrap them in tin foil. Clean bricks, okay? Don't use filthy bricks. Clean bricks. They're going to be near food. Food you'll serve to people you love. You take a chicken, or you... No, you don't take a chicken. Because if you try to do this yourself, you're going to... Hi, Zeus. Zeus just came up. If you try to do this yourself, you're going to be... Oh, good boy. You're going to cut your fingers off. And I don't want you to cut your fingers off. Spatchcocking a chicken is hard, and it's even hard to say, and you might be intimidated by going to a butcher, and a butcher, not just some store where they wrap meat, but a butcher, and say, please spatchcock this chicken. All it means is taking the backbone out of a chicken so it'll lay flat on the grill and cook evenly. Now, you take your chicken that's been spatchcocked or the backbone removed, save the backbone, put it in the freezer, maybe make soup or tell yourself you're going to make soup. You're not going to make soup, but you'll have that to remind you every time you open the freezer that you lied to yourself a little bit. Because we all tell ourselves things that we don't do. It makes good soup. But anyway, that's not the point of this. Put the chicken in a pan without the backbone. Spread it out. Skin side down. And then here's the marinade. The zest of two lemons. The juice of 1.5 lemon. About 2 or 3 juftas of fresh chopped rosemary. Fresh rosemary, chopped. 3 juftas should do it. A jufta is the what you hold in the palm of your hand, like, say, a palmful. It's a little, about a tablespoon. If it's a little more, who cares? I mean, don't get anal about it. This is not the anal chef. This is John Cass. The anal retentive chef was on Saturday Night Live back when it was funny. And it's not funny now. So you take the rosemary, the zest of lemon, lemon juice, olive oil, maybe 1/3 cup, olive oil, salt, pepper, garlic. Yeah, you need garlic. So I'd press out about 5 or 6, maybe 7 cloves of garlic for each chicken. Rub it in, rub it out, all on the top and the bottom, all this marinade, rub it in. Then take it and pour it all into a bag. One of those plastic bags, you know, like Ziploc or whatever. You need about a 2-gallon bag so it'll lay flat in a pan, in the fridge. And you flip that. Flip it before you go to bed. Flip it again when you wake up in the morning. About 24 hours, okay? It's best all day, all night, I mean, overnight. And then you take your grill. Now, if you have a gas grill, I'm not going to help you because, well, I have nothing to say to gas grill people, but you can do this on a gas grill. On the other hand, I do it in a Weber kettle with one layer of coals, either hardwood lump coals or briquettes. You don't want a huge fire, but you want a good fire. And then you, when the coals are all ready, one layer of coals. You'll need a little bit more with the lump charcoal because it burns hotter and faster. Maybe briquettes would be the way to go. Sorry, Gary Wiviat, don't hate me. I've tried them both ways. I think the briquettes give you a more even cook. Lay that chicken out on the grill, skin side up. if you put it skin side down, you're going to destroy the skin, and you're going to, you know, don't be a chub alone. Put it flesh side down, okay? The flesh side, not the skin side. Spread it out on the grill. Take those two bricks that you've wrapped in aluminum foil, those clean bricks, and put them on top of the chicken, pressing it down into the grill. Throw a chunk of apple wood, or maybe not, whatever. It's your chicken. You're eating it. I usually do two at once because, you know why? Because it's so good, people want chicken. And cover the chicken, cover the grill, 15 minutes aside. That's all. 15 minutes. Then you can flip it to the skin side down, and 15 minutes again. You take that chicken. While you're doing that, you can maybe cut 4 or 5 lemons, lemon halves, and grill those with the lemon flesh, the pulp, down on the grill. It caramelizes up a little bit. It brings out the flavor of the lemon. When it's done, when it's about 159 degrees, the chicken, take it out, put it on a platter, hit it with lemon that you just squeezed, that you grilled. Throw salt on it, pinch of salt, good pinch of salt, and let it sit there till it's, you know, till the juices, let it rest for about 5 minutes. And man, you're going to have yourself some beautiful grilled chicken. I mean, literally, the easiest and best way to have chicken. And what did this accomplish besides me giving you an idea that you didn't have about something tasty for the Memorial Day weekend or maybe beyond? It got you away from thinking about that levee, the levee breaking. It kind of took your mind off it, didn't it? Jeff Carlin is here, executive producer of WGN Radio, and the man who told me to do the grilled Italian brick chicken thing on this monologue. And Alderman Ray Lopez is here, Alderman of the Southwest Side. Lori Lightfoot hates him, so he's good enough to be on this podcast. We'll talk about all the virtue signaling going on in City Hall. And where are you with Robert Plant? Singing, crying won't help you. Praying won't do you no good. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Our guest, as I said, is Ray Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward. Lori Lightfoot can't stand him, so I guess he's okay for this podcast. Happy birthday, Ray.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
So, happy birthday.
Yeah, so Ray tweeted at me, Alderman Lopez tweeted at me while he was at, I think, JC's Pub with my friend Joe.
Yes, sir. I was looking for you in the dark corners of the restaurant to see if you were dining maskless in McCook. But unfortunately, I missed you that day. But I'll get you out there next time.
I love that place, and I love Joe.
Yeah, he's great.
Joe Sestero, JC's Pub, McCook. Real food, good pour. Anyway, let's get to the podcast. So, Ray, people, are dying every day in Chicago in the gang wars, as you know. You're one of the people fighting it. You're one of the few aldermen. I've seen you confront the gangs personally, and I was just amazed by that a few years ago when I saw you walk up to them and start screaming at them to get out of the neighborhood.
On Rockwell.
Yep. On Rockwell, yeah. Right after a young person was gunned down. But while all this is going on, the city council is immersed in virtue signaling wars about renaming Lakeshore Drive after DuSable. What is going on with that?
Well, you've got the city council focusing on nonsensical items. You've got the mayor chasing windmills, going after white journalistic racism. And all the while, to your point, John, our city is being terrorized by these individuals who know that there's no accountability, that there's no effort to try and push back against the gang and drug wars on our streets and our city. And I think that, you know, and I hate to say it, you know, being a lifelong Democrat that I am, and I don't want to make this a partisan issue, but, you know, you see this time and again with like these progressives who fight for these causes that they really can't impact or don't have to necessarily produce a result for, while ignoring those issues that they can directly impact, because they'll always have someone else to blame if they fight for something that they can't change, while dodging what they are directly responsible for. And we're, you know, at some point, Chicago residents need to stand up and send a message to the elected officials that I work with, that they want them to focus and get serious about the violence, about what's going on in our neighborhoods. Just yesterday, the mayor introduced her new foot chase policy, which basically does everything but chase criminals. You know, an officer can stop the chase if he feels he can't catch the criminal. A supervisor, can stop a chase if they feel it might end in a lethal scenario. And they're not going to chase you if you did anything lower than a Class A misdemeanor. So we're trying to figure out now, does that mean if you're shoplifting and run out the store, you're not going to be chased and caught? All of this just emboldens criminals at a time when our city and our residents are struggling to feel safe, are voting with their feet, as you say, and talk of rebuilding is going to fall on deaf ears if no one's left here to actually want to invest in our communities.
I should say that Jeff and I are not amazed, and we're not stunned. Right, Jeff?
Not at all. And 2 points to make. First of all, city council the other day was just a wacky sensation. But
I say they planned that for my birthday. It was the greatest crap show I ever seen in my life.
It really was. And we'll get to that in a second, too. But I want to make 2 points. I mean, Alderman, you and John made this point, really, that, you know, you don't see a lot of or any other aldermen really going toe-to-toe with the gangbangers, for lack of a better word, in their neighborhoods and their wards. And it's evidenced by your alderman. I believe you're the only alderman who's been threatened and had bricks thrown through his office, and people show up at his front door, and just the only person who's being harangued by gangs. And what's that tell you? And my other point is to your point about how there's a lot of alder people, aldermen, alderwomen, whatever you want to call them, who make claims or try to push objectives or their plans for stuff that just don't come to fruition. And you see it all the time in marketing, where companies say, hey, we're going to do this great new initiative. We're going to save the world. And then they quietly just 2 years later, a year later, throw it away. They don't tell anybody. Nobody knows, but everybody thinks they're doing it, but they don't do it because it's all about what they look like doing. And, yeah. And you're one of the people I think that does stand up for that, at least. And I appreciate that.
You know, a lot of politicians, and I don't want to throw all my colleagues under the bus, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, a lot of what aldermen do is headline grabbing, just to get the headline, get the credit for an idea, and then move on to the next thing without actually having to produce anything or deliver anything. And nowhere is that more evident, as we saw with this Adam Toledo shooting, where one of my colleagues, Alderman Cardenas said, oh, I'm going to own this. We own this. We have to do something. And then the very next day, there was a shooting of a young girl. And it was mum's the word out of not only him, but all the Latino aldermen who were outraged at the shooting of the brown boy by the police. You know, they don't, they just want to grab the headlines, but they don't want to actually stop the gangs from recruiting our children in grade school. They don't want to help the moms and the dads focus on their families as opposed to pretending to be their children's friends as opposed to their children's parents. And, you know, it's really getting old. And nowhere has it gotten older than seeing the great Luis Gutierrez come out of Puerto Rico retirement home, just down and revoke my brown card because I dared to say that our families are failing and turning their kids over to gangs. It's ridiculous, but you're 100% correct. And sadly, what's not surprising to you, Jeff, or John, is that none of this is surprising to everyday Chicagoans. You know, I think a vast majority of Chicagoans feel like they're let down every day, every time they see the city government speak, because no one's addressing, aside from myself, in a very real way, what's wrong with this city, or providing solutions on how to move forward, for that matter.
You're absolutely right. I mean, most of the people I know, you know, they always they're like, oh, I love this city, you know, because of X, Y, Z. They're always trying to make a case for why they stay here or why they love Chicago or why they want to be here. And it's always to make them feel better about the crap that isn't going their way. And it stems from all sorts of things. But you're absolutely right in that I think, and this is most people I run into, are making excuses for why the city is so great and overlooking the things that just haven't changed in years that could be changed if people, you know, in your position, it could get together and actually do stuff that isn't headline catching, that's dirty and hard, but it doesn't seem like that happens.
If it keeps on raining, the levee's going to break. You've heard that song, Zeppelin? I started the monologue with it, and I started this broadcast with it, and I've got to think that people are really seeing the levee breaking all around them. They see virtue signaling instead of policy. They see no foot chases, no foot chases. I mean, criminals don't just do major crimes. They do minor crimes too. They're criminals. That's why they do it. And that's who they are. So if you catch like somebody who's shoplifting, maybe they have a warrant. Maybe they're on electronic monitoring and they have a gun in their pocket. Just don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, just look at yesterday. The city council approved a settlement for $250,000, which I and about a dozen of my colleagues voted against, and I thank them for that. But we approved a settlement for individuals who were pulled over by the police in a traffic stop. More than likely an investigative stop, but they had grounds. It was a seatbelt. They saw no seatbelts on the individuals, which last time I checked is still against the law. Pulled them over. No sooner the cops get out the car, they fly off. The passenger tries to tuck and roll out of the car while his friend. Oh, my dog's not.
That's not Zeus. Yeah.
That's my dog this time. The passenger tuck and rolls out the car while the driver is still trying to evade police. Rolls out, drops his bag of cocaine. They finally arrest both of them. A judge, Cook County judge, disagrees that the police had grounds, and now we owe them $250,000.
There's an industry, a legal industry that's highly political, that has reach, that's not really being reported on, that makes a lot of money doing this stuff. And there's no better argument for why a great city needs great newspapers than that. And I'm just crossing my fingers, hoping that, you know, someone will have the time to do investigative journalism on this legal industry that's basically, you know, along with bad policing, has cost taxpayers a lot of money, millions and millions and millions,
hundreds of millions of dollars. Absolutely. And especially when it comes to the police, you know, we are subject to a case called the Monell verdict, which basically states that anytime there's an issue with police, we are basically automatically put behind the eight ball because of past historical practices, not necessarily the facts directly associated with the case, but because of past historical practices, police are automatically viewed as more than likely guilty in the eyes of the courts, which directly impacts our ability to win these cases, or in many cases to even feel that we can proceed with fighting back. And that is why the city settles so often, which is ridiculous, because I always thought this country was founded on the presumption of innocence, not the assumption of guilt.
The other day, your ward is somewhat near Midway Airport. And the other day I was out past Midway Airport in Chicago talking to the family of a 13-year-old boy, Xavier Quiroz, who was shot to death right after Christmas on the street. And there was
shooting.
Yeah. And there wasn't really a lot of media attention. The Tribune did a story on it, but it wasn't a big deal because a cop didn't shoot him. But he was a 13-year-old boy. He was autistic. He had few friends. He wasn't a gangbanger, all right? He was walking to the GameStop, and he was shot multiple times, I guess perhaps in a case of mistaken identity. And I could hear the mother weeping as the planes were flying overhead. Now, Jeff's a master of sound, and you're an alderman, and I'm just a reporter. But I never thought you could hear a mother weeping with a jet flying overhead. But you know what? You can. And she asked me again and again, and so did her sister-in-law and brother, who are leaving Chicago because of this. They asked me, why are the politicians so interested in DuSable and all this stuff? And what they meant by is the virtue signaling. And the mother just kept weeping and crying. And I didn't know what to tell them, Ray. I did not know what to tell them.
You know, I think it's very telling when elected officials choose to deflect and fabricate an emergency or a necessity for action to avoid having to deal with the real life scenarios that their constituents are facing. And I think part of that too, I will blame on COVID, because I think a great number of my colleagues and politicians in general have gotten very used to being, you know, armchair legislators via Zoom, as opposed to seeing what people are dealing with in the real world, on the streets, on a daily basis. There have been over 1,000 shootings in this city so far. How is that not a battle cry for all of us to stand up? I don't know. To that mother's point, you know, we are losing our future, our children, on a daily, weekly basis. It never stops. And if you were to see this, the weekend's totals for shootings and murders in a singular event, it'd make national headlines, just like it did with Pulse or any other shooting, you know, mass shootings we've seen. But yet the slow drip of mass shootings that we have in Chicago never seems to raise an eyebrow, particularly among those who need to really step up and defend their residents. And I believe that even now, it is difficult for someone like myself to stand up when you have the mayor trying to throw water over the levee while you're trying to bail it out. You know, you can't have someone who's constantly working against you and expect to be able to overtake what's coming at you.
Well, how is she working against this effort, Ray?
Well,
in your view?
In my view, clearly all of her initiatives when it comes to public safety are not rooted in reality, are not rooted in what truly works in the city of Chicago. Over a year, almost a year ago this month, I sent her a letter of some of the things that worked in my ward in reducing our crime stats, despite being, you know, some of the most violent neighborhoods in the city of Chicago under the previous administration. Things like requiring block clubs to go to CAPS meetings, being able to communicate with police, use of technology, things that all of these things that we've done so well that actually had an impact, and it was ignored. Now you have the mayor who is trying to burn out the police department by forcing them to work 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, you know, from now until Labor Day, basically. You have this administration canceling days off. No longer can you not just do foot chases, you can't do vehicle chases. So you're not even trying to apprehend criminals. You have the police department coding out all of those lower level offenses. And by coding out, I mean, they just clear them off the dispatch screen so nobody has to respond to them. So when your listeners are calling 911 because someone's music is blasting at 1 a.m. or there's, you know, 10 gang members, you know, checking cars as they drive by, those are not considered priority level events. So nobody's going to show up anymore because they're coding them all out saying we don't have to go. All of these things have an impact. And all of those things are directly contrary to what we have been telling our residents for years. If you see something, say something, report it in, participate, do what you need to, you know, be active, be the eyes and ears in our community. Well, what's the point of being eyes and ears if the brain isn't listening? And that's where we're at this point. And there's no end in sight to this madness because clearly Superintendent Brown is not planning on stepping up to the mayor and telling her she's wrong, even though in the news and in the press, he has vocalized the exact contrary policy positions that he's being forced to implement from the fifth floor. But all of that is gamesmanship, is political posturing and gamesmanship at the expense of what people like that young man's mother have to deal with, which is that at some point, the innocent lives will be impacted again. Because gangs don't check the gang card before they start shooting. They just start shooting. And we're not going to go after them.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who was once a friend of the Chicago Way and of ours, Jeff's and mine, no longer, I think she doesn't like us anymore. But that's okay.
Get a tan. It'll work.
Yeah. Greeks were not white in Chicago when I was a kid. On 55th Street, but I'll tell you about it someday. It involves Jackie Onassis and her wedding to Aristotle Onassis, which is why I've joked that that's the day Greeks became white in Chicago. But on a serious note, she endorsed Kim Fox for state's attorney. Now, you're a Democrat. Kim Fox is a Democrat. What signals does that send where you have David Brown coming out railing about prosecutors not doing their job, you know, not going after the cases that are available in front of them? And then Lori Lightfoot endorses Kim Fox. What does that say?
Well, it clearly shows that there's a lot of mixed messaging and finger pointing when it comes to the political sphere of leadership in the city and the county where they intersect, because you not only have the mayor pointing and the mayor's administration, and let's be honest, Brown's not going to say anything that's going to be contrary to what the, you know, really when it comes to that, they've tried to be on the same page and blaming not only Kim Fox, but blaming Tim Evans and the judges for their,
right,
their courtroom manner and judgment verdicts. But I think it sends a very clear message to one group of people, and that is criminals. And they know that the police, the mayor, superintendent, and the judges are all operating on different pages. And when there's confusion in the house, they're going to get away with whatever they want. You know that as a parent. When parents are fighting, kids tend to get away with with almost anything.
Oh, yeah.
And in this case, the adults in the room are all squabbling over who's at blame as opposed to how do we fix it. and the criminals, the drug dealers, the gangbangers are taking full advantage of it. That's why we see 25% of those that were early released for COVID and put on electronic monitoring have disappeared. Cook County's lost track of where those individuals are. 25% of the population who were in jail can't be located anymore, despite the bracelet. We've seen time and again where people who've been given a home confinement or at least on their own recognizance are out carjacking and dealing drugs off the front porch. You know, you got to question where do these, what fantasy land do these people live in?
They live in Chicago.
I live in Chicago too, but you know, I don't know. Maybe my prescription glasses are different from theirs. I don't get it. I know what I see, and I don't know why they don't see it too. Other than the fact that, you know, they live in nice guarded blocks and houses where they don't have to see the gangs and the drug dealing going on. But I think if they spent some time on 43rd and Campbell, where I just passed 10 gangbangers standing outside holding post already at 9 a.m., or if they go and see, you know, 63rd and Morgan, where the boys are selling dope on the block, they might have a different sense of urgency in trying to address some of these issues, whether it's with confinement or with other services to break that cycle. But clearly none of that is sinking in. None of that is making any sense. And all they're doing is using all of this violence as an excuse, at least when it comes to the Lori Lightfoot, for doling out these grants and contracts and awards to these organizations, these community partners who are supposed to be helping us fight violence and are only paying gang members and other individuals to be our intermediaries while still doing the destructive work that they were doing before, selling drugs and gangbanging and running guns and all of that stuff.
That's an interest of Jeff Carlin, this mixed messaging and communications. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, it's again, I mean, this idea, we always worry at talking out two sides of your mouth. And the armchair legislation is kind of what caught me, Alderman. You're absolutely right. It feels like that as long as people look like they're doing something, it doesn't matter. And I stand corrected too in the fact that people are in the city are making excuses for staying here. They're not. I mean, you said it right. The families are going to move. If someone's, you know, your family gets struck down by a gangbang or anything in the city, and nothing is done about it, why would you stay? And the messaging here is just, it's killing me. I mean, I can't tell you, there are probably, I can think of four, maybe five audio people, producers in our newsroom at WGN who have to cut and sit through every press conference that the mayor does or any press conference that comes out of anywhere. And I can tell you they're all extremely irritated that the mayor of this city, who is the mayor of a city who has 50 people shot every weekend when the weather's nice and half, you know, a dozen killed every weekend, doesn't talk about the violence, doesn't correct, say, well, we're doing this or we're going to do that.
Wait a minute, guys.
She doesn't work the weekends.
Wasn't there, didn't she have accountability Mondays? Remember that?
Yeah, right.
What happened to Ray? What happened to accountability Mondays?
He switched to Taco Tuesday instead. Those things went out the window the moment she got rid of Eddie Johnson. And I think that was the whole point of Accountability Monday, was just to try and push out all the police brass she didn't want anymore. Because you notice once she started getting her new superintendent and her new police leadership team, accountability became a non-factor anymore. And now all we have is a city in chaos.
But there's always time to make a statement about a mass shooting somewhere else, but not here. I mean, that's the thing that's just driving me insane, is that every time there's a shooting in a rail yard just the other day, then a mayor makes a statement about it. And there's a shooting at another facility, or a mayor makes a statement about it. Where's the statement about the weekend violence? Where's the statement about the little kids getting killed? Where's the statement about the violence every day, people getting shot on Lakeshore Drive in the heart of the city?
Jeff, you'll like this one. So about 2 weeks ago, there was a shooting. Not that it's surprising, but 2 weeks ago, there was a shooting on a weekend. And, you know, you check the mayor's feed. Clearly, she does not respond on the weekends. But she did respond that weekend because the issue of the day was who got credit for making Flaming Hot Cheetos, which she decided to weigh in on. She didn't weigh in on the child being shot or the violence in general or anything else directly impacting Chicago. She decided it was important to use her bully pulpit to clarify whether or not it was one person or two individuals who created Flaming Hot Cheetos.
And that new video out where she's welcoming people to the beach.
The beaches.
What did she say? Something like, shut up, beaches, or come down, beaches.
It's a play on the word bitches.
Yeah, right. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Beaches. Yeah, that's
come it. On, beaches. Yeah. Like, that's it's yeah, kind of a, right. a slangism.
Yeah, this is the mayor of Chicago. Okay. But she knocks over the I'm not used to that, you know, kind of thing. But she knocks over the
cut out of herself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess she's happy being the punchline of her own jokes.
Well, it signals to me that she's modeling her image and molding her image not to run for mayor again, but for something else. I don't know, John. To me, it reeks of don't get stuff done. Don't worry about the important things. Worry about how people see you online, and the people in the city aren't seeing her online.
Well, let me just say this: the last time we had a novice politician focused solely on how many likes they had and how much their social media presence was and did not focus 100% on the job at hand, that person lost their reelection. At the end of the day, none of that matters if you're still not helping the people who end up voting. And I think that is not lost on the city of Chicago. The city of Chicago, the third largest city, the most American of American cities, expects its mayors to be hands-on and focused locally before they go trotting around doing national stuff. And she's never gotten her own house in order here, which is why she has to make herself the punchline every time she deals with Chicago issues, because everyone else in this city rolls their eyes every time one of these new memes or things happens. It was cute once. It's not cute when you're facing 1,000 people shot and almost 100 children killed in the city of Chicago.
I'll tell you one. Here's one that she doesn't want to weigh in on, and I don't think most of Chicago wants to weigh in on it. Let's use the euphemism that you hear on the police scanners: mass gathering youth at the Bean. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mass gathering of youths at the Bean. Now, if you're a parent, Ray, you want your teenagers to go down to the Bean on a night? Like, do you want them down there at, like, when the sun goes down?
Hell no. I know most adults who don't want to go down there when the sun goes down, unfortunately.
That's a critical issue facing restaurateurs, the hospitality industry, the whole loop, the whole downtown, and they don't want to talk about it. But mass gathering youth, when the cops do wade in, like last weekend, they found, you know, people with guns, made arrests. It's like part of the erosion. I'm not saying kids shouldn't be allowed to go downtown. You know, I was a kid and we'd go downtown and see things that we would never see on our neighborhood, you know, on the Southwest Side. You know, that it was like a new world to us, you know, and it was exciting, and it was like going to the mall, but even better, you know. It was like going to Evergreen Park Mall, but better. You know, I'm not begrudging the kids, but there's something going on, Ray and Jeff, that people don't want to say, and they're afraid. They're afraid to, you go to a restaurant downtown, and you might want to walk with your wife, you know, take a walk. I don't know who's walking. Anybody doing that, Ray? Anybody, like, let's go to this place, have a nice, you know, veal chop, and then take a walk and maybe have dessert somewhere else, Is anyone doing that, Jeff and Ray, in the city of Chicago?
Not in the evenings, by the sounds of it.
No.
And let me just add to, you know, the mayor's policy, going back to what she's doing, what not doing with regards to the violence, you know, she has been taking officers out of all the police districts to send them downtown to make downtown appear safe, to have flashing lights and uniforms in the central business district, in the hopes that that entices people to come back and do exactly everything that you just said, John. And the problem that we have is that if you still have a policy, which CPD does, that when you see large gatherings, you are not to engage until there's injury or shootings, what does that tell those individuals who assemble and think that they could get away with almost anything, knowing that the police are just going to stand there and watch and not engage because they're ordered not to? And that's not something that just happens downtown. We have illegal parties popping up in our communities, 200, 300, 400 people strong, all invited through social media, that are overwhelming our districts. And I believe this summer will continue again to overwhelm our districts because the police are not authorized to break them up before they become unmanageable. And a lot of this is just a failure to manage these situations because those frontline officers trying to protect and defend our city are being hamstrung by the brass and by the mayor at every single turn.
It sounds to me, as someone who covered City Hall for many, many years, that you might be running for mayor yourself, the way you sound.
No, that's two podcasts you've said that.
Well, let me ask you, are you running?
Right now, I'm trying to keep my ward and together and keep the city together the best we can. I'm not making any decisions what my future holds at this point. You know, I feel like I'm giving the same answer from a year ago when the pandemic hit. I'm just trying to get through this. I'm trying to make sure that we can all get through this. And I think that question keeps reemerging because in the absence of mayoral leadership, being the sole voice of reason in this city, I think most people just expect that to be the case. I would love for the mayor to stick and do her job and get her head out of her rear end. But in the meantime, I'll continue to lead from my vantage point as she fails to lead from hers.
Ray Lopez, 15th Ward Alderman, the guy who likes JC's Pub, and so do I.
Absolutely.
A dad, a dog owner.
A dog dad.
Dog dad, and yeah. Thanks for being here, Ray. Thanks for being on the Chicago Way.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, Jeff. Have a great one.
Thank you, buddy.
Attention! Welcome back, beaches!
Jeff, I've got to ask you one thing that we didn't talk about with Ray, but I have to ask you about it, besides all the, you know, histrionics of the city council and DuSable and all. You're a racist. No, you're a racist. I'm not all this nonsense while kids are getting shot. Okay, right. You know what? You want to name it? What, name everything after him. Take all the name Daly off and name everything after DuSable. I don't care. It's not going to change the sound of that woman, that mom's voice with the plane going overhead.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to use all the signs you have to take down for name change to plaster over the violence. So,
but I do have to ask you about something else.
All right.
Okay, on the Chicago Way. That song, When the Levee Breaks.
Yeah.
I listen to it and I think about what Ray Lopez was saying, what you've been saying, what we've all been saying about things going on in Chicago and Illinois, just the whole nature of the politics. And then I think Mike Madigan's got to be thinking that song too, because his chief of staff, Tim Mapes,
oh man,
just got indicted for obstruction of justice, he was given immunity. And then he allegedly lied and obstructed.
Right. didn't live up to the agreement. Apparently, the feds are not fans of the phrase. I cannot recall at this time.
At this time, at the present time, I cannot recall. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Your Honor, at the present time, I cannot recall or rationalize those specific dates. That's
well,
it's my courtesy. Yeah, it's a crazy. I mean, did we know? I mean, we knew that there was questions around maybe some where he would fall this. And then it's like, okay, interesting, interesting. And then this thing hit without much warning. And yeah, I mean, this is.
It did. It really, it took me by surprise. I was finishing a column on Georgi Mihalovich, one of my favorites for The Fire. And I get a call from Kristen. I can't look at your column. Tim Mapes just got indicted. Yeah. And I thought, oh man, you know, geez. Yeah. So she had to write an editorial. I didn't, you know, because of my early deadlines, I didn't. Right. But in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
Now, what's Tim Mapes going to play it? How is he going to play it? Like, is someone going to come to him and walk and talk about the Roman senators?
I think so, John. I think this is the velvet parachute for the velvet hammer. If you have to ask me.
Remember, Tom, the senators, when they went after the emperor, their families were taken care of, Tom. Their families were taken care of, like Frankie Five Angels.
Exactly. You've done a good service. This will not be forgotten. Yeah.
Take it easy, Frankie Five Angels.
Exactly.
I couldn't help but, and I got a text from a prominent politician who's like, is he Frankie Five Angels? What's going to happen with this? And I thought, oh man.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's serious stuff when you're facing. Now, if the judge is going to play games, and of course, Mapes has not been tried. He's only been accused.
Right.
And every person has a. His defense is saying that it was a trick and that he really was telling the truth as best he understood it. And okay, that's fine. That's, you know, let's have a trial. But if he's convicted,
yeah,
and the judge does not drop the hammer,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
then you know that it's all this is BS. Because if you get like, oh yes, obstruction of justice and, you know, perjury. Okay, here's 9 months
right
in a work camp, and you only miss a baseball season, like Big right. Bill Cellini only missed a baseball season. You know,
mm-hmm.
Then it won't have any. It won't, you know, do anything. I don't
right.
think.
It's not gonna. It's gonna be like, well, okay, this was just for show.
And they still haven't got Madigan. They're close to him, but.
Yep.
This thing now, I mean, it's serious. And, you know, it's easy to blame Madigan. It's easy to point the finger at the Bobo, you know, like, you're yeah. the one. You're the one. You're the witch burning.
Right.
Right, as many do. But do we, Jeff, think about ourselves? I mean, how responsible are all of us in Illinois, in Chicago, for this Chicago way and the nature of it that allows for people like Madigan and all the other alleged corruption and convicted corruption.
Yeah.
How responsible are we as the culture?
We keep voting them in as they say. And it doesn't help that they're, you know, always the same guys. I think it goes back to kind of what you and I were kind of talking with the alderman, is that, you know, Chicagoans are good at rationalizing why Chicago is the place to be. We get 4 months out of the year where the weather's really nice. We have a great lakefront. We've got great sports teams. We've got plenty of art and culture.
Besides the Fire? Yes, we have other teams.
Right.
Right.
And that's all true and great, but, you know, those things exist in lots of places. And there are also lots of places where kids, you know, we don't have record numbers of children being killed on the streets every year. And we don't have record numbers of people shooting each other every year. And You know, it just it. I think we're absolutely to blame, but I think that we've gone past that, and now it's people are the blame is leading to people leaving, as we've seen. And I think the people that are coming in now, the younger professional types that have been lured in by the Chicago's quote unquote Silicon Valley,
right?
It's not going to last long for them because they have the means to not be down here and not be here and not live in this city. And especially after a year, I mean, I can't tell you how many young professionals I know who are living in the Loop or living near the Gold Coast or living in the West Loop.
Who sold their condos and
Who booked or came in and it only had been there a couple of years, but they were renting and they're like, nope, peace out. I'm going to find another place to go. I'm going to move out. Away from the city, and it's a never ending list. And Christine, my wife, manages an office building for a tech company, and she says it too. She says that they're trying to convince people to come back now and say, hey, we think we're going to open up our offices again, yada yada yada. Well, no. They also made it easy for a lot of them to move to places and work remotely, and none of them want to come back. Why would I come back to spend $40 to park and $20 for lunch and $10 for Starbucks or whatever they want? Why would they do that when they can spend half that money and do it someplace else?
And behind all that is the concern, whether it's, and I think it's real, of violence.
Right. And that's to my point, is that most of those people, they left because last summer they were, one, they couldn't get to their apartments because the city was locked down for one reason or another. And two, the violence was terrifying, and they found an alternative that was, hey, I can go somewhere else.
You know what's an amazing thing in the new technology, and you are Mr. Science of this podcast, that the technology is such now that people can make their own cities, right? And you're going to see it. You're going to see other places, maybe Iowa, New York, Wisconsin, Indiana, other hubs growing, right?
Oh yeah.
Where people of, let's put it this way, where people who have the means, we're not an industrial city. We sold all that to China and they took it and took all our manufacturing with our politicians' help.
Right.
And so we don't have that, or we don't have enough of that.
Right.
And so people form their own, you don't have to live in the city and worry about your wife going to Walgreens and getting carjacked,
Yeah.
Not that you would be carjacked in Walgreens, but I mean anywhere. Going anywhere. You don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. And all the whining about how great it is in the city and the, let's go to the lakefront. Let's go to the beaches.
Right.
A lot of people don't want to go because they don't want crowds. They've been trained by the Democrats to avoid crowds, and now they're scared. They can't. They have their masks on. We have little kids playing Little League in the heat with masks on. The whole thing is insane, yeah. And people just don't want to do it. And so the levee's breaking, Jeff Carlin. How it do you sure like that? Is. I gave you that sound that you can run throughout the podcast if you want.
The levee's breaking, and we're seeing it, and can't deny the fact that people are fleeing in droves.
So there's your headline for this Chicago Way: when the levee breaks, Alderman Ray Lopez and grilled chicken under the Italian bricks. For Jeff Carlin. So for Ray Lopez, Alderman of the 15th Ward, possibly a mayoral candidate, taking down Lori Lightfoot again and talking about the difference between virtue signaling and leadership. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, the man who wants me to talk about grilled chicken. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for Now at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. Thanks for being here as the levee breaks along the Chicago way.